Good.
Constitutionally and should be complete with us.
it is actually where these people provide skills training, that there isn't really a comparable institution in the public sector where the training takes place. And we are not compared to those public sector comparable institutions, but the universities and colleges. So we are expected to have a media centre with electronic systems and a library. We are expected to have research facilities and research projects. To employ academic staff members with higher education qualifications, if it's higher education, and to have expertise on education and training methodology on our staff. Now, an example of this, the problem that our company comes across, is the company that successfully has been training hundreds of warehouse distribution and other stores in logistics. The planning and the control of the flow of goods in the field through an organization or manufacturing process, right? And this has been happening over many years. Now the employment was set up that this company has to register the Department of Labor of Education and therefore be accredited by the Council on Higher Education. And the following happened. The provider was not accredited due to the fact that they did not have a license, did not do the formal research, and did not have a staff member that was an expert in business education. Now, for a company where the employer would pay for staff members to register to this institution and to do business education in logistics, while they were studying, they got practical experience at the workplace, and they could apply their learning in their own workplace. It worked actually very well, because people who were in already employed were studying the theory through their certification and applying it immediately. But this kind of company does not have the kind of finances to set up the library. And in any case, the warehouse staff across the country will not be able to visit such a library. In addition, there is no need for the research that is required in a higher education institution, because people are learning practical things and the knowledge base is gained from research already done. They were using the scientific journals very extensively that were available for students. So there was no doubt that the material that was used was quite up to date. But in the end, this company had to close down, and we still see today no other company that can train those people who are not there in the workplace. This is one example where it couldn't work. We cannot set the training provider to occupational qualification to look like a university. Two other examples of this kind of problem is that the Department of Education insisted that they were only registered in companies incorporated as a PTY limited. Hundreds of training providers and at least there are 50,000 training providers listed on the email or free of paper for delivering training at factories and other workplaces and are registered as those for corporations or partnerships, some of them. There has never been a good logical reason given for this provider.
No, I have been difficult. I never know that it's me. I'm not here, you know, studying there. It's here with them. I can't see it. I even feel there when you were sitting before. I don't know. I don't know anything.
Would that help you?
Yeah, I mean.
I'm sorry.
Would that
help you?
Yeah, it's not only yourself.
that it also takes by the TPO and then registered by the Department of Labour, so that we can once and for all put pay to the conflict that is at the moment existing between the two departments. It will also need another change, and that is in section 26J on page 31, which states that the minister may, after consulting with the TCCO, by noticing the disease, make regulations regarding. And here it says the accreditation of occupational skills development provided. And I would like to suggest that we say the registration and accreditation of occupational skills development providers. And thereby provide for the registration of training providers as is required by the Constitution in this book. So there are two small changes that I'm requiring there. One is in section 17, page 17 and 18, and we merely want, after accredited by the TCCO, the officer, and then registered by the Department of Labour. And in section 26J, we're simply adding the registration in, and then say, as accreditation of occupational. So it's very small changes, but it can make an enormous difference in our country's way of rolling out skills development. And it will make the life of learners, providers, and the state a lot easier. Right. The next point on my presentation pertains to the same thing, but I'm just trying to correct and avoid the duplication of something that's in here. And that is to say that we don't want the registration of providers as employment services as well. If the providers are going to register with the Department of Labour, we would like to avoid another registration with employment services. What we have here is to say to establish and or register skills development providers and or institutes of occupational excellence as prescribed. That is what it says at the moment. And you can see the word register there of skills development providers. And I want to suggest that we change that to say to record skills development providers for the purposes of having them on record for learners to use, and establish and register maybe the institution, the institute of occupational excellence as prescribed. Thus, avoiding being registered in the same department twice, one with the department and one with the employment services bureau. So it's simply a small change that we need to make in order to avoid duplication. Let me say the second point that is highly important to us at the Association of Providers.
Maybe before that, so the last one that you could talk about duplication, I'm trying to get it quite a bit.
The amendment of the section 20,
there's something about the first recommendation.
No, it's the second recommendation. Section 23 of the Act, and it says employment services are to establish and or register skills development providers. And I'm simply proposing that we leave out the registration of skills providers so that we don't have a duplication of registration in the same department. Thank you. Thank you. negative anything. The second point that the Association of Private Providers wants to make is actually point 3 on our presentation, on page 3. It's 26.8 and it comes from the functions of the CCPO. An issue here is the following. It is important to ensure that the skills development qualifications under the CCPO, or if that's called the same thing, must include all levels of qualifications from level 1 of the NCD to level 10. All working citizens have a right to realize their potential by developing themselves within their occupation. Many occupations have no recourse to university studies as the knowledge and skills are work-based. I'm going to give you two examples of such qualifications. The airline has, I would like you to imagine South African Airways becoming an institute of higher learning, as is required at the moment if you register with the Department of Education. Would they need to have media centers, academic staff, and research facilities? I'm just reverting back to the point I made before. But what we need to realize is that the training that goes on in an airline like this is of a very, very high level. It goes far beyond level 4, it goes right up to level 10. They have to do all three. They have to already comply with international quality requirements for training of their staff, such as pilots, aviation controllers, and the crew. This training is on the highest possible levels of skills and cognitive thinking, and is not offered at the university. Therefore, we want to maintain that training that's given in the workplace, such as this, needs to be going up right to the top level of the NQS, and it needs to be recognized as such. The other example we're giving is power station operators. For example, the power station operators at Eskom have been doing their theory training through Technica for some years, up to a level of 12 weeks. But this has now been stopped and it is regarded as occupational training. So both theory and practice will be happening in the workplace. To control the giant power station requires very high skills and knowledge, and this learning takes place through simulators and in the workplace itself. One would like these operators to be able to achieve qualification skills, or awards if you like to call it that, on the appropriate level. I want to be very sure that this legislation actually addresses that point, because in the past there has been a lot of contention about the level 5, 6, up to 10, which is post school level. We want to write into the skills development amendment bill the following. Just in clause 26H2 to say, subject to any policy issued by the Minister in terms of section 26E, the QCPO is responsible on all levels of the NTS for, and then we can go on to see what it says for them. To actually write into this bill that responsibility, which is from level 1 to level 10 of the NTS. Are there any questions on this panel?
No, you may just finish the presentation. There will be questions after
that. Ladies and gentlemen, by making these four changes to the legislation, The problem between the resultant satisfaction and neither regarding the satisfaction and the satisfaction of training providers will be at an end, because they will be able to register with the Department of Labor where they should register them, and that is only those who offer occupational qualifications. And those people will be able to offer training in the workplace up to a level 10, where that is needed for people to have those kinds of skills and knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the presentation by the Association of Private Providers and Education Training and Development, Marietta Panoi. Members, I'm going to open up for questions on the proposal of the amendment. I'm sure the presentation was very, very much clear to us. Is there any question around it? Any question from you?
Yeah. Thank you. I just want to hear in my mind, I mean, like most addresses to the committee, it's always sounds eminently reasonable because you don't have anything else, you know, you have this, an opposing view or so forth, pure suggestion. As I understand it, you are already saying that for practical on the job training, you don't require the higher accreditation as required by the Department of Education. So that the Department of Labor, which is more hands-on, should be the registering authority. Is that, am I correct in that?
No, sir, no, as a matter of fact, I'm saying the opposite of that. I'm saying that when you offer workplace learning, it can actually go up to the highest level, as in management, as in pilot, and so on. And you should be able to award some qualification to these people as they achieve in the workplace. So it's not a lower level,
actually.
Maybe we should just take questions, but there will be a follow-up, Mr. Gartner. There will be a follow-up. You may make a follow-up if you want now and then.
One thing, one of the dangers that we seem to face often is, so I say, a lot of these fly-by-night type of people offer training, you know, you see them jumping, springing up and then disappearing, you know. That really taxes a lot of people. The rich favorite nowadays seems to be computer skills. You know, these private training institutions appear and disappear. And it affects a lot of people. How does that fit into what you are saying? If I'll make myself clear.
You did.
Yeah, before this, Maria, let me welcome the state law advisor, Maria Ine, who is on the institute. You are welcome, Maria. Yeah, we thought you could have been here, but we know that you are not only dealing with this committee, you're probably coming from another meeting, so you understand that, but we would really like you to listen to presentations and your comments thereafter. Of course, the department is here also. And there has been a presentation by the Association of Private Providers of Education, Training and Development by Mayor Marietta and Royen. The first set of questions, actually the first question comes from their presentation. You may respond to that. So, when you talk about skills development training and occupational training, most of that takes place through the teachers and through contact with employees. There is a contact between, if it's a learnership, it is between the teacher, the employer, and the provider. If it is a self that stands for an employer, it is between the employer and the provider. And these are well looked after in the law. Where there are people trained as of private individuals, yes, there are sometimes people coming up and taking advantage of these private individuals, but they are also looked after by the law. It is a criminal offense to take people's money and not to train them. They must be accredited to the CCPO in any case, who can look after this, and if they have to be registered by the Department of Labor, they will be fully backed by that. So there's no nothing of that that law. The registration of the Department of Education and the registration of the Department of Labor will have the same function of establishing the viability of that company. That's all it's going to say. Are you okay?
I'm
I'm very glad that Linda is asking that question, because one of the things that we have found, and I have been sitting on the field for that we had tackled, of the chairman for a while, and dealing with the problems that providers were experiencing, and I think that the others will back me on that one. The problems experienced by training providers was very much a matter of peer group evaluation, not actually being done by peers, where you would have university staff members, academics, visiting a business and evaluating them as if they are a university, you know, with these criteria in mind, which is impossible for a training business to meet, because the whole purpose is not to be a university, but to train people on the job and to do that properly. So it's been very, very difficult. And we have seen in the field committee of that was so many of these training providers actually closed down due to the fact that they could not be accredited as such. Now, if we have suitable registration regulations for training providers, we can extend them as long as they don't expect of the training providers to be looking like an educational institution, such as the university. Then we will be able to judge them to comparable institutions in the state, such as skills training institutions, maybe at Paris State or something. And if this is really done by peers who know about business and who know about occupational training, then that would also help a lot. So definitely, I think there have been a lot of opportunities for learners closed down due to the fact that this kind of accreditation has been taken so amongst the skills providers.
I think the first question was, it's a very important one.
which talks about the role of Papa. And he would like to hear from the side of the state law advice, also the examiner, what was your view on the guy, which is the important one. Maybe we, before answering, can I just give,
thank you,
Chair.
Daniel Hansen from Facebook. I think the Ms. von Royen brings a very important issue to this house, and it has been a source of a lot of concern. And basically, I can explain the problem as twofold. To be a provider, you have to be accredited by a quality assurance body. And secondly, you have to register with the Department of Education to be a fully operating entity. Now, the situation at the moment is that you could be accredited as your training provider, you're accredited by one of the teachers, but the Department of Education will not register you, because they only recognize the two bodies, Umeluti and the CHE. So that has created a whole lot of problems, and so people would be accredited by a teacher, and then they would have to go and be re-accredited by either Umeluti, that is a further education and training band, or by the CHE, if they are in the higher education and training band. That was one problem. The second problem was that the criteria that they have for registering a provider in fact makes the comparison between the provider that of an education institution, for example, the example of the von Royen University, that's like a university. And so this will continue even when, if you have a QCTO under a 3QC model, 3 quality council model, you'll find that if you're accredited by Umeluti or CHE, the Department of Education recognizes that body, and if you are accredited by the QCTO, the question that CAPES is putting to you is they don't want any uncertainty about the registration. And so one can fix it in two ways. Either the Department of Education has to recognize the accreditation by a QCTO and then not require that the person gets accredited by the Umeluti or the CHE. And secondly, the registration criteria have to be appropriate to the training provider. And what happened is putting before you today to say, we don't want to go through that uncertainty. If we can register with the Department of Labor, it solves our problem.
Yeah, still on that one. Maybe do you want to take the second question from Mr. Cody, and then we go back to the first one so that we create on this. Maybe I don't know if from the department and also the people advice I would want to confirm that or to add. Or, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just personally would love to say that I feel that SACWA's role is monitored, and that is so important because we are now looking at dividing the education and training, which has always been looked at as an integrated concept. And now SACWA's role is more important than ever before, because we have to get recognition for the training that happens on a whole level of education. They're not the same, but they can actually be on the same level. And this is extremely important because the legal descriptors that govern these matters will decide them. And, you know, for people in the workplace, citizens who have been developing themselves through learning in the workplace, I feel we owe it to them that they can actually be proud of what they have, and that they don't have to feel they still have to go to university because they don't get recognition for all the knowledge and skills that they already acquired. So that is the role that I see for SACROC. It's what you say, that coordination between the three QCs is extremely important for us more so than ever before. Thank you.
Now, the effective role of SDB, can you come to that?
You know, it's quite confusing out there, especially for providers sometimes, and especially if they are new providers, to distinguish between the standards that are applied to them being a provider and the standards applied in a qualification. Right? Now, the ECD actually only looks at the standards of the qualification that individuals achieve to be declared competent. That's all that they are involved with. The standard of delivering education and training is actually determined by the Quality Council of the future and by the ECQA of today. And it's not really featuring in the ECD or the NSD discussion.
Does that mean the ECD has nothing to do with the registration of these providers?
Thank you very much for the question. I don't understand it for us. Now, let me close the question of the membership of the SCD and the NSD. Because that is how I asked this before on the question of the staff of the membership and the confirmation of the customer. So, don't you think in terms of the law, there is a need to review the membership in terms of the entities and also of the entities to include the issue of the quality of the private provider in relation to the quality of the training, you know, or of the outcome of the training. Because if there was a mismatch in terms of that, it could create problems, okay? But if there's a quality, that says this is a very assured quality in terms of training. Everything is assured quality in terms of outcome. And that will make it be very easy. That is going there, and then that outcome contributes to the other outcome. So those things, maybe the membership also is a challenge.
Before this money, I don't, there is fresh tea outside. I don't know if can we finish that after tea? Maria, then do you want to quickly take that, and then when you come back from tea, then you finish. Okay. Madam Chair, I am not really qualified to answer the question. I have got answers, but I think the grand artist of SACROC will be much better equipped to answer that question. And I would very much like him to take it off the table.
Okay, can we break for fresh tea for 5 minutes and then we come back?
what is it you say? What you bring if you want to do practical training?
You have a phone there. Oh,
okay.
You have to do the phone call.
I want to put my phone
Thank you. Yes,
in this country. And we are going to be making the attempt to respond on Thursday. But before, this is very important question we have for that we report. Maybe I'll go to the
two or three points with regard to the discussion on the table, specifically with in respect of the legislation of providers. First of all, if the legislation and particularly the State Development Amendment Bill does not talk about the legislation, it would and remain silent on that process, it would not provide the clarity that providers need with regard to where they should be registered, and it would not recognize currently that the state does not recognize the accreditation by CITRA, ECQA, and going forward the QCTO. The current registration process of the Department of Education, as we already heard this morning, talks about recognizing only the accreditation by ONUGSU and the Council of Higher Education. So we firmly believe that the legislation that we're discussing now should not remain silent. The second thing is that we would also like to see that the Department of Labor, through its legislation process, if it becomes included, be able to and be in a position to act on illegal providers and get rid of the guidelines with regard to the criteria that the Department of Labor would set for the legislation process and be able to act on. And the third point I'd like to make, Madam Chair, is that the Department of Labor is attuned to the needs of the workers and is attuned to the workplace, and therefore should be attuned to the training of workers in the workplace. And the registration process and the criteria set for that would talk to what actually should happen in the workplace for the training of workers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's useful to consider the two processes for quality assurance. You can't have quality assurance without standard setting, and once you have the standards, you can go and look to see whether the standards are being met by the learner and by the training providers. The issue about standard generating bodies, the SGBs, that the honourable members asked about is the proposal for the QCTO is that those standard generating bodies are going to be modified and they will be composed of committees of expert practice. And so, in terms of the joint policy statement, standard setting and quality assurance are being put together in the same house, as it were. So it will be handled by the QCTO, and it's because the Department of Labor controls such a wide area, the QCTO has also got powers of delegation. So even at the moment, the backward format saying standard generating bodies, but it doesn't have national standards bodies anymore because of the review process, because of the criticism that was made about national standards bodies. Those have been reduced to consultant panels to try and make the competition process smoother. But all of this means that if you take, for example, the standard setting function moving to the quality councils. That would be then, you'd have three quality councils. They would oversee their own standard setting process as well as their quality assurance process. Now the question then comes about how they're going to do this and who is going to have oversight. In terms of standard setting, SACWA has oversight and has an evaluative role in that the new N2F bill assigns the registration function for standards and qualifications to SACWA. And so we will exercise that to make sure that there is that the standards and qualifications that we register, that these are internationally comparable. So we can get that part handled. When it comes to quality assurance, tomorrow when we go to the Portfolio Committee on Education, we will be making the point that where the joint policy statement says under Section 70 that SACWA will audit the QC's compliance with the objectives of the N2F. In the N2F goal before Parliament, that function has been totally removed. In fact, in with respect to quality assurance, the position of SACWA, other than a research function where we can monitor and evaluate the system, there is not a strong function. We have made a submission to that. So it would be very important, and I think the Honourable Member is absolutely right, that if you want to have a proper oversight function on the part of SACWA, then we need to have that evaluative role for quality assurance considerably strengthened. And we will make that input at the Portfolio Committee on Education tomorrow. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
I was sorry, that some of the statements are very interesting. And maybe that is why I said, and I agree that we can use it there for the whole So, in terms of that, would be, if that part is removed, who do they think that we will do that quality assurance? If that is not going to be the one. You know, because I thought that statement about the trying to see a tie between the SAPA Act and the NGF Act, and then deal with some of the challenges of this. So that is the right question to me. The second question is to happen to the last question. Is already a philosophical question. Do you think, you know, in this era of global skills development discussion, is it sustainable? Is it still sustainable, or is it still cool? Or is it still cool to really about to talk about training programs? Is it still cool? Is it not sustainable to speak about our institutions of skills development or of excellence? So what do you think? Because what is another era of globalization is still happening. Call people as private or public training profession. I still remember my brothers and sisters, they were marching like that to the Department of Education and Training in the 80s, and it was not cool. So, what do you think is typical of us to use such a word?
Now, I'm sorry that the word training seems such a bad connotation in the public. I am the chairman of the HRD committee of the professional body for human resource development and human resources. That is the HIBPP, South African Board for Personnel Practices. As the chairman of the HRD committee, we have been looking at what it is one for those people who are employed very often as trainers, who are called HRD practitioners, and in a previous legislation were called ECDP practitioners. We need to find the right kind of label for those people now. And we would start at how many people say to us, I don't want to be an ECDP practitioner. And my qualification shouldn't be called an OBEDP, the plan. Nobody knows what that means. I want to be a trainer, and I want to be a damn good trainer. You know, I want to get these skills transferred to those people. And I'm not ashamed of being a trainer. So that training is something that people are proud to actually take up. Now, we have already in the NQF law the word training provider is defined, as you can see in my paper. Whether this is called HRD, as in staff training, or training, as in general, or occupational development, is to me a semantic. I just know that when I go down to the shop floor, where people are being trained as tradesmen and all these really important scarce skills, the person that stands there in front is called the trainer. And he can be a very, very senior person too. And he can be a very skilled person. So, yes, I hope that answers your question. I've been to Australia, to the UK, to the United States, and everywhere. People are still, even though it's human resource development in a more limited way, they still refer to themselves as trainers. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Well,
you
have
to come in then.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with the enacting of the N2F Act, when it becomes an Act, the SAPRA Act will be repealed. And if the issue around the coordinating role for quality assurance is not sorted out, then effectively every QC will be responsible for quality assurance under its purview, under its jurisdiction. Now, if one looks at the underlying reason why the inquiry was made this morning, it is about what is going to be recognized. And the Honourable Member's question about what is cool and what isn't cool, it is at the heart the issue of parity of esteem. So it's kind of give a dog a bad name and then you can hang it. So if it's training, then it's kind of death, bad education. And there's a writer called Stephen Billet that always makes the argument that we're always fighting for parity of esteem. And what we need to do in NQF system is to make sure that all qualifications, irrespective of whether it's called an occupational qualification or a professional qualification or a general formative qualification, must have quality and must be regarded as having value in our society. And that is the issue at stake. And so whatever the role Parliament finally decides, the important thing is that the South Africa Qualifications Authority and the three QCs have to work towards parity of esteem for all learners of the day. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. I think we'll come up to say something and then we move on.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Member. I think that the first proposal around the registration is quite important. And I think there were some issues that Sam Isaac raised in the whole question of the relationship between the PhD and the Council for Higher Education, Umazusi, and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation. But I just wanted to go briefly back to say that, yes, it is true that the establishment, the main reason for establishment of this body was to try and ensure quality within learning. Now, yes, in the schooling system, that is the public schooling and the private schooling system, there has been that problem we've had previously under the previous government, there are more than 20 departments of education that had various standards. But eventually, after 1994, there was a move towards the English Department of Education, and eventually, humanity to ensure quality between the public and the private schools. The higher education, because we also have problems in the higher education area, the Council for Higher Education established the Higher Education Quality Council, which is now propagating and which is now given that propagation. But the problem has been in this area of work and how we actually go about ensure quality. Now, one of the things that the people not mentioned was the fact that the speakers came in, but they only focus on the accreditation system. But the registration of providers that work in the work environment continues to, that is the registration of either as a teacher, a PCU or whatever, and there were differences in terms of registration in education, and they have continued to operate as organizations that are registered in terms of other ways. But what they then did was to secure accreditation from CETA. But there is still a whole layer of bodies that continues to provide education and training that is either operating and registered or in association with professional bodies that are established in terms of different pieces of legislation. If you look at the National Medical Council, the Medical Council, etc., they exist and they then perform a different role when it comes to nursing colleges and assisting the Department of Health Services in the application of nursing colleges and so on. But there are other providers that continue to exist and operate with the non-statutory bodies. There are associations that have emerged and they continue to exist without necessarily existing under a specific legislation. And that is where the tension has emerged. And even during the amendments to this Act, that is why there was a careful consideration that you exclude those professional bodies that are established in terms of their own pieces of legislation. But then you find a mechanism that begins to either make sure that whatever they do is either aligned to the pupils or the higher education. And secondly, you also need to bring them back home, especially the number of people for those can be within the framework they are working within the organization. Now, in terms of the proposal, I think it is very sound, and I think it makes sense to include the proposal. But I think under 17, it may be slightly misplaced because Section 17 is actually talking about the learnership contract and the accreditation, and it may not necessarily be the correct place that's located under 17C, because the new amendment says they still doesn't provide accredited by the QCQ or group of such principles and providers. The same sentence there talks about the learnership agreement, meaning an agreement and entity to the structural decree. So it may not necessarily be appropriate there, but I think it does make sense to include under the UCC that the minister may, by notice in the government, established and registered field development institute. So I think then that proposal will then go quite well in there. But just principles that we will debate that were there in the late 80s and 90s prior to the establishment of the mentor training act and the same concern of according to the members of parliament for vocational training and funds to training for dogs and all this is for people who can only use their hands and without brains. It has all those connotations. And I think there was lots of debate that eventually embraced and gave to the name of this act, youth development. And I think currently, and not only in South Africa, but international youth development, but even in the in our own country, it has gained the kind of currency that it deserves. It embraces the knowledge that whole concept of the knowledge and application of this application. And I think it has gone a long way. Hence, in the whole act, to maintain that consistency and to be in line with the act, wherever training appears, there is a suggestion that the state of skills development provided. Because even those institutions are about skills development, yes, they may be there are different people that come and attend, and what we are afraid of is the reversal of the gains that have been made, but also the question, I mean, there's a contradiction. On one hand, we're talking about the cubicle covering all levels, which I think is what the presentation is making. But if we are also not careful, we can also end up in a situation where what Mr. Ives calls the principle of the notion of the seed and the kind of recognition that you want to give to qualification. I mean, the country is talking about skill shortage, the need for skill teaching, and all the I can't remember the literature talking about the need for trained people. And I think we've moved and we're in line with the. The development that look at international and that to maintain the currency and the respect. In South Africa, a lot of young people are shying away from doing vocational or what they call trade because they consider it to be dangerous. But I think the notion of skills has actually opened up and has actually given them, especially in the energy of that kind of respect and the desire to learn in a number of areas, because it is actually something that was changing the attitude.
Thank you very much. We want to move forward. But just say to members, tomorrow we'll be starting at 12. That gives us a chance, those who will be around, to attend to the meeting of the education portfolio committee. So it will be very much important for us. I don't know if it starts at 9 or at 10. Okay. So we'll be starting at 12. So please, members, can we just to go and listen to the presentation and the evaluation. And then, and of course, for our meetings, if we can just attend to all the meetings, we'll be able to finish what is very, very soon. Especially next week on the evaluation, if we can, we try everybody. Those who are not here, we'll try and talk to them. So that we speed up the process. Let me give a chance to Mr. Isaac from Papa for his presentation. And of course, thank you very much for Marietta and Rosanna. Thank you very much for coming, and we will be, as I've already said, we will be discussing the needs for all these student patients, and then we don't want to assure you a thing in our country because we are, as I've been saying, that even through your presentation was very much clear to us, and thank you for bringing all this.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I was just reflecting that I think this is the first time that SACWA has made a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Labour, and this is also my 11th year at SACWA, and if you look at qualification of policies around the world, the CEOs don't last long. They last about 18 months, 2.5 years, and then they either get fired or there's a problem. And I think that it's probably, this is going to be our first chairperson, but certainly not our last, because I think the issue that I want to talk to, which in particular is the QCCO, is so vital for the system to work that I think the monitoring and evaluating of the three QCs and the QCCO in particular is going to be very important. I'm pleased to report that this changes that come to the NQF, to the SACWA Act and now the NQF Bill, in fact makes possible for us to move to the next level of national qualifications framework development. And we are particularly concerned that the establishment of the QCTO, which is a new QC on the block, is absolutely vitally important. And in the establishment, in the skills development, Act of Principle, it says the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation is hereby established as a jurisdiction. We believe by adding the word in the form of a Schedule 3A national public entity under the Public Finance Management Act just establishes this QCTO with the same parity of the other two QCs that will operate under the Minister of Education. And the reason one wants to make the argument, and I should probably declare my interest, I sit on the National Skills Authority. In my position at SACWA, I work on the Department of Labour's Working Group 3, which is concerned about the setting up of the QCTO. And I'm for the Department of Labour to be able to move quickly once the amendment bill is passed into an act and attended to. It means that the Minister of Labour can move very quickly because you know then it's going to be a Schedule 3A national public entity. I know that the Department of Education has been working on meeting with the Treasury and trying to set up whether making the business case for it being a Schedule 3A rather than a government component. But it would just seem that this is a case that is so cut and dry that they would all have to do their normal budgetary processes and things like that. But by making the small addition, it just pushes the development of the QCTO very quickly forward. And so the minister can then do it as deciding for nominations for the board of the QCTO and start to move fairly quickly, that you take away that uncertainty of what kind of body is going to be. Chairperson, we did send when the draft law was made available. available. We did send a detailed submission to the Department of Labor, and we're very pleased that a lot of our comments that we made there have already been taken into the bill before Parliament, and I don't have to take up the time of this committee to go through with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Isaac. That was very clear. Members, is there anything on that part? The last statement explains everything. Yeah. Okay.
I just made a comparison of
succinct way, and part of the difficulty is is that the way we name things are incredibly important. And then the way those names get used to make differences. And we'll look after which names become important. And so this game is played over and over again. The Honourable Member is quite right that it confuses everybody out there. And people that are not close to the debate can't see the wood for the trees. And so it would help everybody if we had shared meaning and shared understanding of the various kinds of things that we talk about. And unfortunately, when we try to take things, for example, the first naming that we had was we had qualifications based on unit standards and qualifications not based on unit standards. The academic world then spoke of a thing called whole qualifications. So I have to point out to them that there is nothing unholy about qualifications that are based on unit standards. They must all be our whole qualifications. And similarly, we stand the danger that someone did a PhD on unit standards based education, why the NQF failed. And the person then made a case that you got this reductionist process of creating unit standards. And now the same argument is going to be made about you're now taking that unit standard and you're taking it down to three other kinds of unit standards. But I think these are the technical debates that will always happen. And I think it is up to SACWA and the CQ team to try, and the essential thing is the quality of what we offer, not about how we call things and name things and go about the normal business of education and training. But getting that shared understanding and the shared meaning is particularly important, because if you don't, then they'll say that this qualification is of less value than that qualification. Let me also just clarify the different kinds of qualifications. There seems to be four types of qualifications that come forward. There is the formative qualification. When you leave school, that's a formative qualification. When you get your Bachelor of Arts in African language, that's a formative qualification. When you get a BSc engineering, that's a professional qualification. It is a prerequisite for you to become a professional engineer. So that's a professional qualification. But then there's something called the professional designation, which is also a qualification. That is your license to practice as an engineer. That's your professional engineer, or your PRN that you write behind your name. And so you can see that as things progress, you have a formative qualification, you have a professional qualification, you have a professional designation. And then you have another group of, I'm calling it a qualification, some people might call it a path qualification. These are people that are progressing towards, for example, people that work in form centers. They do something, and if they do it and they get some accreditation from a British organization, then it's called an award. It's a path qualification. So those are the kinds of things that I think we can talk about it in a way that makes sense. Where the conversation gets difficult is one person always trying to say, my qualification trumps your qualification. And I think that's what we need to get an understanding of. Qualifications are fit for purpose. They will enable you to do something, and other things you can't do unless you do some more learning. And I think that's the message that we have to get out there, is the real value of what a qualification that there is, and then how do you enhance the range of places where you that people can progress to their full potential. Thank you, Chair.
And I want to bring you, when you look at the newspaper, the entire newspaper, when they advertise, they do not speak about anti-Islamists. And that's a serious trouble. I'll give you an example. My young care was employed by the Department of Justice. And then when they were asked, qualifications, whether they have met him or not. She said he had him. But he had N2F never from. She was dismissed after it was investigated that she doesn't have a network. That is a serious technical problem. So that is why I'm asking this question, because if these issues are not explained, particularly to academics and all the people that are using the local tradition, it's costing the diplomatic on the ground. Because that is not necessarily his end level 4. That's the routine in the investigation. But then they said necessarily that it is end grade 1. So this is technical. And if it is academic discussion and so forth, that is costing the diplomatic on the ground. So this is what I want to ask as the last question. How can this be that is not overcome that particular problem? You know, and protect. Work out and protect those who are unemployed that are seeking work at the moment.
The chairperson, again, the honourable member is asking a very important question. And I'm going to answer him with the three points. The first point is we require in our society navigational tools that enable people to navigate the education and training landscape. And we have a major project at SACWA looking at that. SACWA's job is not to do career guidance and counseling, but it is important to make the communication of what you need to work where and how to get it. And so very soon we will produce a set of navigational tools that will help people to make this matter easy. So it is something that is receiving attention. But my other two points will clarify what the real issue is. The real issue is the social uses of qualification. Now, what the Honourable Member is thinking about is precisely that. If I don't want to employ somebody, then I say they must have a Bachelor of Science degree. So then I cut out immediately anybody who doesn't have a BSc degree. There might be someone with a BA that has Math 3 that would be quite acceptable to do the job. But because of his BSc, the system is cut out. And so the practices, the human resource management practices in this country need to be so in sacred exercise, we would say the person needs to have a 3-year bachelor's degree or its equivalent. That opens the door to more people to qualify. So the same thing is quite acceptable in the example that you gave, that someone said the person must have a school leaving certificate or its equivalent. So it's the social uses of qualifications that we're dealing with. And so human resource managers have become quite, in fact, the issue that we discussed earlier, if they don't want to give a training provider work, so first of all they say, who are you accredited with? Now they tell them you're accredited. Then they say, are you registered with the Department of Education? If you say no, they chase those people away. And that's the problem that gives rise to why the private providers want this matter resolved. Because human resource managers sometimes act like a sort of tinpot general. And they, in fact, can, anyone they can exclude, they find a reason for excluding. The third point I want to make, Chairperson, is, yes, there are people that advertise and they don't pretend to be a devil. But my own newspaper content analysis, and we check the newspapers to monitor the use of the word NTS and the fact word. And we find a tremendous amount of adverts do actually state NQF level. The dermatological qualification at NQF level. So I think that metaphor is telling about there are four, and one can't deny that there are four adverts that appear without NQF level. But increasingly there are more people that come up with NQF level. In fact, I was stopped the other day. I was speaking on my cell phone, which I shouldn't do, and I was stopped by a traffic cop in one of the towns, and he said, "Now, what must I do to someone who is talking on his cell phone?" And I said, "Well, you know, for all that I do for this country, you should let me go." He said, "What do you do?" So I said, "I work with Network." He said, "Oh, yes, an NQF. I've got an NQF level 6 qualification." So the word is getting out there that you, in fact, are, you know, that the things that are labeled and NQS is out there. So it's getting better. But I think we don't know enough around the way in which the issues around the social uses of qualification. Let me just give you another example. In the mining industry, under the old Manpower Training Act, you have 1638, so you could become an auditor. It was always acceptable before 94 that if you got that section 28, you were regarded as an artisan. People who qualify now get that section 28, so they pass their trade test, and all of a sudden some people are saying, but you're not a proper artisan. And again, it's the human resources factor. Sometimes it is a quality issue, other times it's just they want to exclude people. And I think, we are also supporting the research into work and learning, and we think a lot more work needs to be done in that area. So we make sure that when people get qualifications, it's worth the fact that it's just not. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you. What is the NQF level equivalent to? If you
at the moment now, we must always, because things are so thin. At the moment, we have 8 levels on the NQF, we're moving to 10. At the moment, level 6, you can have a certificate, you can have a diploma, and you can have your first degree. They're all at level 6. In the new move to 10 levels, level 7 will be the first level at which you get a degree. But there's a difference if you get a diploma at a level, and you get a degree, and there's a big difference in the amount of credits, for example. A first degree, 360 credits minimum, and a diploma at level 6 is 240 credits. Now, again, in the changes that's coming, you can get a diploma of 120 credits under the higher education qualification framework. And again, there's a whole debate around that. Chief Minister, I can just say that it's important for us to get all the related NQF matters in the Skills Development Act amendment law, the Higher Education Act amendment law, and the GEDSETCO Act amendment law. So all of these things are consistent. And we're saying that instead of calling each of the sub-frameworks that exist under the various QCs, instead of calling them qualification frameworks, we should say the higher education qualification sub-framework. And we should say the occupational qualification sub-framework. And similarly with the general and further education qualification sub-framework. Because if we don't do that, there's it's one NQF and three other NQFs, and I think it's important that the message goes out that we just only have one NQF.
Is that a submission you're making now? Or is that
it will be be a submission that we will make to the Education Portfolio Committee tomorrow, Chairperson.
Members, I don't know if there is any, if that is not done.
Sorry, can I just get clarification in my own mind? Is that SACWA is happy with the bill and all they want us to do is to add the Schedule 3 in
there? Yeah, I think that is the point here. And of course, tomorrow, if we can attend to, if we can attend to education meeting, we will hear more about the 26, the section 26 fee. And of course, we are saying that we will ensure the status of the status and accountability of the QCTO under the Minister of Labour as well as the Minister of Education on these two quality campaigns. Yeah. But thank you very much, Mr. Isaac. I hope we will be able to attend tomorrow meeting about education. Maybe one or two people there representing us. And thank you for coming, and it was very much useful and helpful for you to be here today so that we could be able to clarify some of the issues of the first presentation. So thank you very much for coming. If we from here, from the state law at my time, a way of approving.
Thank you for that. I just want to put a question to the
I wonder if maybe let's see if he by some when he finished. State law advisor would want us to make a small question here. You may do that now in the next week.
Chairperson, a state law advisor is partly correct that if part is covered, that the QCTO must be managed in accordance with the Public Finance Management Act. But by making it a Schedule 3A, which is the import of what I am reporting, it takes it out of the debate of what kind of body. In fact, if you didn't put section 3A, then it could have been and a public entity. The word public entity and where it fits in the schedule is important. Otherwise, somebody could argue that it could be a government component. And if it's a government component, then it must still function under the Public Finance Management Act, but it doesn't have the same nature as a public entity. And both the Council on Higher Education and UNRUTI and SACWA are all public entities, fully under the control of a minister and under Parliament. And under Schedule 3A, we have to make annual reports available to Parliament and all of that. But it will help in the establishment of the QCTO far quicker if we just take that out of the debate of civil servants that will say, is it a public entity or is it a government component? All the evidence that the Department of Labour has worked on is that this should be a Schedule 3A. And by putting it in the legislation, you just prevent any squabbling about it and you free up people's hands to implement it. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I will foresee the mechanism, but that's the only. Because we are closing now. Do you have anything to say before I leave, no, Mr. Marco?
No.
Okay.
Sure, I think that there are two different issues. And this is something that we have to guide from ourselves. The first one talks to the juristic person. Now, whether when you say it should be present, the service is scheduled 3A applicant, 3B applicant, C, and so on, it will then depend on the kind of business standards that you're working with. And I think that is something that we can look at and see how that should phrase it. But the second Schedule 3 is not necessarily talking to the same issue. The second Schedule 3 is referring to a schedule that is in the Act, that is page 15. It basically says that the QCTO will have to be established in the manner in which it is described under Schedule 3, that is the composition and constitution of the QCTO. So the two are referring to two completely separate issues. The second Schedule 3A refers to the attachment where ultimately what Mr. Albert was talking about was the question of respecting the deceased person and spending it as a Schedule 3 public agency as the person of trust.
So, do you think that move could work for NSF in the same way? Do you think it can work for NSF?
Yeah. The NSF is already in terms of an interpretation by the state legislature, that is the problem. The issue that is confronting us is the format and the nature of the public agency. And we have developed a different case, submitted it, and from the comments we just know, the business plan that we have is much more of a government component. Now, there are issues that are confronting us, especially with the multitude of bodies that are established. There is one school of thought that says if you establish bodies that you fund from government and you then say you are independent and arm's length, the question is independent and arm's length from whom? Because they are fully funded by government and they are there to assist the government and using public funds to assist government to actually implement programs and so on. So that is one. But there is also another view that says if you are taken, they are able to move quickly from the bureaucracy and implement what they are supposed to implement, what they need to do to take the cue from the Act and the legislation that ratifies its mandate, but also maintaining the question of accountability, the issues around accountability to Parliament, accountability, or the role of the executive officer, the role of the accounting officer of the Parliament. We have to give good example. I mean, the scope at times will summon the DG labor to say, but still, our role in system. And yet, what is the role? But then, in terms of the TFM data, the DG labor is the accounting officer of the department, but it's not accounting officer of the system. In terms of the TFM, the board in that case is responsible. But the institution has a relationship with the department in that they act as established under the executive authority of the Minister of Labour, and their power to resolve them if they do the continue. So those are some of the tensions that continue to exist with the extra and the standard of the training broadcasting corporation, the sport council, all those things. And I think this is something that we're struggling with to say what comes the kind of both best model to try and implement and see government so this is something that you have to then also apply your money to
thank you, sir. I think we'll hear more of that on Thursday. On Thursday, it may have been closed and then you have plenty to help us. No, on Thursday, when the department will be responding. And of course, during our deliberations, and we are going to be getting some money from the department to serve you from the legal advice or legal department. Yeah. And another matter, I was a little bit confused. I know that we have people from your team, from the department, also from National Skills Authority. Can I just give you the task of introducing your team also for the NSF so that members know exactly who they are? I know that we also have the acting senior executive mayor. Members, you know of Dr. who is left. Now we have
member of the National Skills Authority, but she is also currently the acting senior executive manager of CISA coordination. So all the CISA now report to her is the director of Dr. Fruit. We have
And where is Dr.
Fruit? I don't know now, Honorable Chairperson, which you have amended the crossing of the floor bill by the across the floor to the system. He is now the chief operating officer of the Mining Administration Authority. Mr. Karuma Shamani is the head of the executive manager, National Skills Authority, health, and women with feminine.
But is that a lot of
women's health? Women with feminine is the manager National Health Authority section. She works directly with I know that some of you know that in a different capacity as a minister of PA. So I don't know that across the globe. Mr. Elias Nathan. Mr. Elias Nathan is a member of the National Security Authority and the Executive Committee, of NSA. He represents maybe the private employment agency in the authority. We also have Ms. Cindy Newman, who is a labor representative on the National Authority. We also have Mr. Kulu Mbongo, who is the community representative on the National Health Authority. And Mr. Mabena was supposed to be there on the labor. But we also have Ms. Rosen Matias. She is the representative of the provider on the National Health Authority and also another member of the National Health Authority. And most of these members also form part of the NEDLEC extended negotiation team where the bill was negotiated and comments from the general public was being
thank you. Thank you very much for sharing with your team. Really, that is going to make our work very easy. No one would say this. We haven't had the deliberation. And from our investor, thank you very much once more for being with us. And as I said, there is going to be an adjustment about the Friday meeting. I actually confirming that we are not going to have a meeting Friday. Because Friday we expect it to be an adjustment to be responding to some of the limitations that also to our input. So we are going to couple that with the public hearing on Thursday when we were working with that. So tomorrow we are going to start at 12, as I said, and the team members try to avail themselves to them their education. So you can help us. We are going to be meeting with our African Institute of Standards account on the following day. So thank you very much and please continue. I'm sure there's two places outside. Please don't go before.
Oh, no. kind of low position of the community. Then we do it to manage
the one.
Well, thank you. I'm going to make
okay.
Okay.